This is MP3 audiobook made on the article V Newsians Walk Our Streets, and can be downloaded or followed in the text in the article on galactic.no. Google the title. V Newsians Walk Our Streets. By Paul M. Vest, from 1954 in Mystic Magazine. This story is labeled on our contents page as true. The editors believe what Mr. Vest tells in it. And we wish to point out that Mr. Vest himself believes it. What we want to caution you, however, is that sometimes everything is not exactly what it seems to be. If Venusians actually are walking our city streets, Mystic intends to do its level best to prove it. Thus we ask that anyone who can add to Mr. Vest's story come forward now with any evidence they may possess. It may be extremely important. The identity of the flying saucer man may be absolutely vital to our national safety. The experiences I am about to relate may seem so incredible, so bizarre, so utterly fantastic that I have hesitated to verify them in print. To testify to these facts is not only to admit that we have extraterrestrial visitors, but to assert that beings from another world are walking on the streets of our cities. These extraterrestrials are familiar with our manners and customs. They speak our languages without a noticeable accent. They dress in our clothes and look enough like Earthlings to pass for one of us. Basically, I have always been something of a skeptic. Hence, despite all evidence to the contrary, it still is difficult for me to declare with absolute certainty that I have met and talked with a Venusian. Therefore, I'll merely present the facts of my experiences and leave it up to the individual reader to decide for himself whether or not space beings walk among us. 8 months ago I had but slight interest in flying saucers. Of course, like most other people, I was rather curious about the flying saucer phenomena. In fact, I believed I had seen one of the saucers one late afternoon about a year ago out over the Pacific Ocean. I noticed it first as a tiny silver disc high in the sky. I watched it hanging apparently motionless for almost 5 minutes. Then suddenly it appeared to flip in a peculiar manner and simply vanished. But even having actually seen one of the incredible things, I was still not greatly interested. My personal opinion was that they were secret technical developments of our government. Then in June 1953, the first of an amazing chain of events occurred. A stranger phoned me from Los Angeles. He identified himself only as Bill. He stated that he had come down here from a region near Seattle especially to talk with me. He mentioned in particular a recently published article of mine, The Secret Wisdom Behind the Great Religions, Fate, May, 1953. I endeavored to dissuade him from making the trip out here to Santa Monica, but failed. Finally, I agreed to meet him at the bus stop at 20th and Santa Monica Boulevard at 6 p.m. the following day. At about 5:50 I parked my car directly across the street from the bus stop, where I had a clear, unobstructed view in all directions. The 6 o'clock red bus from Los Angeles zoomed past without stopping. I watched it disappear down Santa Monica Boulevard. Just to make certain Bill hadn't arrived on an earlier bus, I got out of my car, walked to the intersection and looked in every direction. But the streets were absolutely deserted. I had just turned to get back into my car when I heard someone call my name. Startled, I looked back and saw a man standing at the bus stop, waving his hand in greeting. I was dumbfounded. An instant before, the streets had been absolutely deserted. Bewildered, I saw him approach the car, smiling. He introduced himself saying, "I'm Bill, the fellow who phoned you last night from Los Angeles." We shook hands and I recall being aware of the peculiar feel of his hand as though it were without any underlying bone structure. "I can't quite figure it out," I replied. The Los Angeles bus passed this stop without even slowing down. "A few seconds ago you were nowhere in sight. How in the name of heaven did you get here?" "Oh, I came from up the street," he replied vaguely. I didn't press him further, but his reply certainly didn't satisfy me. For I knew he couldn't have come from up the street, for I could see 4 blocks in all directions while I was out of my car. We drove to my apartment a short distance away. I didn't say much, but he talked at random of his impressions of Southern California. When we were seated in lounge chairs in the living room, I made a few mental notes. He was about 6 feet tall or slightly over and appeared to be about 28 years old. His eyes were dark, almost black, and his hair black and wavy. He was dressed in ill-fitting sport clothes in which he didn't seem to be very comfortable. A casual observer would certainly not be startled by his appearance. In the crowd he would pass as a rather unusual appearing person. But as I studied him more closely while he talked, I was aware of certain strange characteristics in his physical appearance. His skin was exceptionally white, so white in fact that it appeared to have an odd bluish tinge. His cheekbones were unusually high and his eyes and brows had a peculiar Oriental cast. Yet in no way did he resemble a true Oriental. And I noticed that his ears were oddly pointed and appeared to be more delicate and complex than any I had ever seen. I recalled how odd his hand had felt in my grasp. Looking at his hands, I noticed that his fingers were long and tapering and so smooth that they seemed to be without joints or underlying bone structure. He spoke slowly and clearly with no trace of an accent, but he seemed to be choosing his words with great care. I noticed too that his voice had a peculiar resonant quality. As I mentioned earlier, I've always been something of a skeptic. I have met swamis, yogis, mediums, clairvoyants, mystics and self-styled messiahs by the score, but I have never been duped by any of them, even those who are sincere but self-deceived. Also, I have met several persons whom I know without any doubt to be true spiritual adepts, even as I have known several sensitives, or mediums, who are honest, sincere and able to produce authentic paranormal phenomena. From years of research and experience in occult and psychic phenomena, I now can usually discern the true from the false almost at a glance. But my strange visitor had me deeply puzzled from the moment I first met him. He was like no person I had ever encountered before. Perhaps ESP, extrasensory perception, entered into my awareness of his strange psychic and spiritual qualities. In his presence I was immediately acutely conscious of a completely foreign and heretofore unknown vibration. I didn't know who he was, but I did know my visitor was no ordinary man. We had been more or less making conversation on subjects of general interest up to this point when he turned and abruptly asked, "Did you ever hear of Orfeo Angelucci?" After a moment's reflection, I replied, "No. I'm sure I haven't." "Angelucci is living in Los Angeles," he explained. "Recently he has had a most unusual experience. He is the first Earthling ever to make a trip into outer space in what is popularly known as a flying saucer." At first I wondered if he was joking, but it was obvious he wasn't. "I don't believe I understand," I replied dubiously. "The actual existence of flying saucers certainly hasn't been authenticated. Now you tell me a human being has traveled in one." He half smiled. "Oh, I'm not a fugitive from a psycho ward," he replied as though answering the sudden doubt in my mind. "And neither is Angelucci, although some people consider him psychoneurotic since he has started telling of his experiences with the saucers." "You mean you believe this Angelucci actually has traveled in a flying saucer?" "Yes, I can affirm that he has," he continued. "But Orfeo needs help now. That's the primary reason they sent me. To request that you aid him in telling his experiences to more people. They are well aware of your deep interest and unusual experiences in the field of metaphysics, religions and the supernormal." I made no reply. But I pondered his strange words and studied his face intently. His absolute honesty and his sincerity were apparent. Also, I was again acutely conscious of that unearthly awareness about him. At last I said slowly, "You speak of a mysterious they, may I ask who are they?" His eyes held a detached, far away look as he replied, "In the brief time we have known each other you have realized many things about me. Actually, none of that information was gained from our conversation. I shall not now verbally reveal to you my true identity, or the identity of those who sent me, for you would doubt me. but I promise that before I leave tonight you'll know who I am and also who they are." As I listened to his portentous words indicating that he had telepathically read all that was in my mind, I recalled previous meetings with several of Earth's genuine adepts. I remember how they too had revealed their true identity to me in utter silence. Realization of their true spiritual status had to be gained entirely through extrasensory perception, or not at all. Words later served only to verify the paranormal communication. Thus I knew that the man who openly proclaims himself an adept, a master, or a guru, usually is not one, while the true spiritual adept goes unknown, often in humble garb. As these thoughts passed through my mind, I saw a peculiar change come over Bill. His body appeared to grow rigid, his expressive eyes dulled, as though his body had suddenly become an empty shell. It was at that moment the incredible knowledge came to me in a flash of intuitive understanding. I knew with absolute certainty that my visitor was not of this earth but a being from another world. An icy shiver ran down my spine. "As they appeared to you today," I felt my muscles tense. My conscious mind recoiled with a kind of psychic shock. So bizarre, fantastic, so wholly unanticipated was the revelation that I could not immediately adjust to it. Silence, like a tangible thing, hung in the room between us. As in a daze, I saw the animation coming back into his face. Then he looked directly at me and smiled warmly. As my eyes met his, I felt a deep bond of friendship and understanding that seemed to reach out across millions of miles and somehow touch an unknown world. Intuitively, the realization came to me that here indeed was a man from another world, but certainly he was no stranger. Rather, a fellow being. The spark of light that lighted my being burned more brightly within him. In the moment of revelation, I knew he was a much wiser, gentler, and more highly evolved being than I, and with infinitely greater perceptive ability, but basically I recognized him as a spiritual brother. And beyond that, nothing else was of much essential importance. He closed his eyes and rested head on the back of the chair as he said quietly, "Brother of Earth, tell me all your troubles. They are really not nearly so serious as they appeared to you today." A feeling of awe passed over me as I recognized again his supernormal abilities. And in the light of his understanding, the problems that had worried me for weeks seemed suddenly to be petty, trivial, and a little absurd. After a moment's silence, he said, "Now you know who I am," with a deep inner conviction that no words on earth could ever give you. "Also, you realize too that they who sent me are far wiser than I who am but their intermediary." "Yes," I said slowly, "I believe I comprehend." But even as I spoke the words, my conscious mind couldn't quite grasp the tenuous, new understanding that had come to me. After a moment I added, "I would never have dreamed a meeting between planetary strengths could be like this. Actually, the thing that surprises me most of all is a most simple thing, the strong feeling of kinship. Of mutual and basic understanding between us." "Yes," he agreed in a low voice. "It is the same throughout the cosmos, no matter what the material objectification or etheric individualization, the spark of eternal being is always identical. For all are essentially one and are part of the infinite and everlasting spiritual fire which is the Father." As the psychic shock gradually diminished, thousands of questions teemed in my mind. Questions about his world, its civilization, the flying saucers, their purpose here? But I realized that he would impart what information he wished me to have on those subjects. When I spoke again, I said, "This man Orfeo Amshlachi, you mentioned, does he know you?" "I've met him briefly only once. But if you'll allow me to use your telephone, I'll call him and arrange for you to meet him and hear his story." With that, he phoned Angelucci and set a time for me to visit him at his home on Glendale Boulevard later in a week. Following the phone call, Bill talked freely about many things that were puzzling me. He stated that the extraterrestrials who had contacted Orfeo were extra-dimensional, etheric beings of a high spiritual order. He stated definitely that was not one of them. He explained that the Venusians from our neighboring planet were of a more material evolution, that though they differed from us in certain basic physiological principles, still many Venusians could pass for Earthlings. He also mentioned that our present theories concerning the atmosphere and surface conditions of the planet Venus were entirely erroneous. He stressed the idea of reincarnation and the inevitable law of compensation as regards the inhabitants of Earth. I recall in particular an illustration he used that startled me. He said that to the etheric beings who have evolved far beyond the infantile perceptive states of form, color, sex, conflict, time, space and material illusion, which is the present erroneous state of Earthlings, our planet is comparable to a huge vat, or barrel, of broth for production of penicillin. To the senses of man such a vat is a rather ill-smelling, offensive thing, but nevertheless it produces the precious golden-colored penicillin. He said the vat is comparable to Earth and its peoples, while the comparatively few spiritually evolved souls of this age represent the precious golden product of the vat. Eventually, however, every human being upon Earth will evolve into the higher consciousness. Later, he gave the names, addresses and telephone numbers of over a dozen persons in the Southern California area. Some of these persons, he asserted, has been contacted by space visitors in various ways, while others would aid in piecing together the confounding puzzle of the sources. He said numerous Venusian contacts had been made with Earthlings by means of ham radio sets and tape recordings. He furnished names and addresses. Other contacts, he declared, had been established through sensitives, or mediums, by means of clairvoyance and clairaudience. He also gave me the names of persons who had met and talked with extraterrestrials. When I asked him why the necessity for secrecy and mystery surrounding contacts, he replied, "At this time, it is the only possible way. Also, we are to a great extent under the direction of the etherics, the great ones who contacted Orfeo. Earth's people are woefully emotionally immature and their prison-like three-dimensional world is preponderantly false, as compared to reality. Men's minds are crystallized in error and filled with violent prejudices. Upon your Earth the mere color of one's skin, a slight difference of religious belief, merely belonging to a different race or country, in fact, the most trivial deviations precipitate animalistic belligerencies, warlike, hideous brutalities and the bloody slaughter of millions of fellow creatures. Can you then truly be surprised when I tell you that the beings of certain other worlds view Earth as Earthlings might look upon a den, whole of deadly serpents, stinging each other to death? Much of that stinging is done with words, attitudes, discriminations, intolerances and a host of other lethal psychic weapons. Mankind's greatest teacher, the etheric Sun Spirit, whom you know as Jesus Christ, who took upon himself the error of humanity to teach men simply to love one another, was crucified and tortured by those he came to save. And yet today men self-righteously demand that etherics land their craft openly at one of your airports. But, like children, you are learning, slowly and painfully. Eventually all will attain their lost heritage. In the meantime we will help insofar as we are permitted to do so." I sighed and bowed my head as I said slowly, "What you say is probably only too true, but believe me, man's lot is not easy. Imprisoned in error as we are, ruled by our animalistic emotions, and living in uncertainty and insecurity with death and decay as our final material conquerors, it is difficult indeed to rise above the animal, man and attain any true realization of spiritual reality." He nodded his head as he replied in a deeply sympathetic voice, "Yes, we understand. Earth, the planet of sorrows, is one of the hardest and the most difficult paths of evolution in the entire cosmos. And to make it even more severe, mankind must work out their own salvation. This is the law." There was a pause as I pondered his words. Then he abruptly changed the subject. "After I leave you, you may begin to doubt much of what has passed between us," he continued. "Therefore I want you to contact the persons whose names and addresses I have given you. In particular I want you to get in touch with a newspaper reporter on a large Los Angeles daily." He gave me the name of the newspaper reporter, the name of his newspaper and two telephone numbers where he might be reached. But as the reporter has since requested that I not use his name or the name of his newspaper, I will refer to him as Max Morton and his newspaper as the Los Angeles World. This reporter, Max Morton, he went on, has been contacted by two Venusians, and from an earthly factual standpoint his contact is highly significant. But, I don't quite understand, I remonstrated. Why didn't the Los Angeles World print Morton's story? I'd think it would rate headlines around the world. Bill smiled. The reporter and his associates still can't quite convince themselves that the whole thing isn't a big hoax of some sort. They have factual proof of something highly extraordinary in the metal plate, but they're still dubious, as the idea of space visitors is a rather touchy subject now. I promised to phone Max Morton the following day. At about 10:30 that night I drove Bill to the bus stop and watched him board a Los Angeles-bound bus. He said he was leaving the following day for the North, but promised to see me again after my story of Angelucci's experiences appeared in print. Later, I contacted Max Morton at the Los Angeles World as I was eager to hear what he had to say about the two Venusians. In brief, here is the fantastic, but true story he gave me. In February, 1953, a strange appearing man, dressed in a tweed suit, came into the newspaper office. He told the receptionist that he was from the planet Venus and stated that he wished to see the city editor. She, of course, thinking it was a gag, rang the city editor and quipped, "A man just dropped in from the planet Venus to see you." "Oh yeah," remarked the harassed editor. "I'm busy. Let Max Morton talk to him. He's interested in characters." The receptionist, still certain it all was a huge joke, sent the character into the press room to see Max Morton. I asked Max for a description of the person, and the minute description he gave tallied in every detail with the mysterious Bill who had visited me. Max said the fellow had looked at him with a serious face and stated in a forthright and direct manner that he was from the planet Venus. But as a more or less hard-boiled reporter, Max was familiar with screwballs and was not too surprised, as he frequently met Napoleons, Peter the Greats, etc. In reply he made some wisecrack. With that the Venusian ran his thumbnail lightly across Morton's desk. Genuinely startled, Max saw that the glazed, hard surface of his desk was gashed to the depth of about half an inch. He began to wonder about the fellow and attempted to duplicate the feat. But, he declared, he couldn't even make a slight dent in the desktop. He was puzzled, but still thought it was just some trick the oddball had learned. With slight urging the fellow commenced talking about himself. Briefly, his story was that he and a companion had arrived on this planet in a flying saucer. They landed their craft in the desert near Barstow, California, and concealed it there. In Barstow they were able to get some old clothes and hitchhiked into Los Angeles. Max, still sure it was all a hoax being perpetrated on him, jokingly asked them how they learned our language. The Venusian replied that the inhabitants of his planet monitored our radio and television broadcasts and thus had easily learned our languages and customs. He said that he and his companion had come here specifically to study Earthlings at close range and to gain a better understanding of our minds and thought processes. The reporter was by no means convinced that the fellow was anything but a crackpot, but he was getting curious. When he had to leave for an appointment at the courthouse, he agreed to see the Venusian and his companion the following day. When the fellow arrived the following afternoon, he had his companion with him. Max said the second one appeared to be almost an identical twin of the first. In the meantime, Max had procured or obtained heavy plate of the hardest alloyed steel. He suggested that the Venusian attempt to mark the metal as he had the desk surface. With apparently no effort, the fellow ran his thumb lightly across the steel. Dumbfounded, Max saw that the metal was gouged across its entire surface in a streak over half an inch deep. Was beginning to feel rather uneasy, but was certainly not convinced the fellows actually were Venusians. Both of them stuck firmly to their story, however, and later requested Max to help them get jobs in Los Angeles. They said they were without funds and found they couldn't get around here without money. Max skeptically agreed to see what he could do. Through a friend in the newspaper's Department of Investigation, he was able to get the first one a job in the department. But he made the fellow promise to keep his identity secret. Hence only three persons on the newspaper's staff knew who the Venusian really was, or claimed to be. The fellow worked for several weeks in the missing person's office and succeeded in astounding all of his co-workers with his baffling and amazing abilities. Max declared the so-called Venusian could locate missing persons within an hour in cases that had baffled their best investigators for months. In fact, Max was beginning seriously to wonder if the Venusian might actually be telling the truth. For it was obvious to everyone that the fellow possessed incredible extrasensory perception. Max talked with him and asked the Venusian for permission to write an article about him for publication in a magazine. But the Venusian steadfastly refused. In fact, he said he and his companion wanted no publicity whatsoever as it would negate the true purpose of their visit here. Nevertheless, Max went to work on an article about them. But before it was completed, the Venusian and his companion suddenly disappeared. Investigators have not been able to find any trace of them since. Max said a full report was given to the FBI along with an analysis report of the piece of gouged steel. The report, by one of the foremost laboratories in Los Angeles, states that the mark gouged in the steel plate would require pressure of over 1,700 pounds to produce. Further, that such pressure exerted by any known force would shatter that particular type of metal before marking it. Even more startling, the analysis of the indentation revealed the presence of over a dozen elements not present in the rest of the metal. Max says he is now convinced the two strange fellows actually were from the planet Venus. He declared that neither of them appeared to have any earthly knowledge except what could be gleaned from our television and radio broadcasts. He told me his article about the two Venusians would appear in a foremost national magazine this year, 1954. In the meantime, he requested that I refrain from giving his name or the name of his newspaper, otherwise, he gave me full permission to write this account. The true identity of Max Morton and his Los Angeles newspaper have been given by me to the editor of this magazine and have been verified by him. After my talk with Max, there was certainly no longer any doubt in my mind, but that Bill, my strange visitor, was also a Venusian. He had indicated to me that he was from another planet, but he did not state which one. Also, he had stated that he was not of the high spiritual order of Etherics, who had contacted Orfeo. But the physical description of the two Venusians, as given to me by Max, was similar in every detail with the physical appearance of Bill. Several days later, I met Orfeo Angelucci and made plans for writing an account of his incredible experiences with the space visitors. This article appeared under the title I Traveled in a Flying Saucer, in the November 1953 issue of Mystic magazine. I asked both Orfeo and Mrs. Mabel Angelucci, his wife, about the mysterious stranger Bill who had arranged our meeting. Mrs. Angelucci spoke up quickly and said, "Oh, that man gave me the creeps. He rang the doorbell one day and introduced himself with an odd name I can't remember. He seemed to know everything about us. It frightened me. There was something so strange and downright weird about him. In the last several months, I have met and talked with others whose names and addresses Bill gave me. Several of these had met him only briefly. Others didn't even know who he was and were startled to learn of the data he had given me about them in connection with the sources." True to his promise, Bill visited me following publication of the Angelucci article in Mystic magazine. Our visit was brief, but he told me they were well pleased with the general reaction to the piece. Also, that everything was developing as anticipated, but that it would require considerable time and the efforts, understandings and experiences of many persons before Earthlings would be able to attain even the haziest understanding of the true nature of extraterrestrials and the sources. In addition to Orfeo Angelucci, he mentioned in particular the work of George Van Tassel, Mee Blaine, Donald Kehoe, William Pelly, Ray Palmer, E. L. Gardner, The Theosophical Approach, Max Miller, Desmond Leslie and Chris Wilwan. A few others, he stated, had been carried away by their own burning enthusiasm and had literally made mountains out of a molehill. Nevertheless, in the overall picture, their work too would prove generally helpful. Before we parted, he asked that I reread the book, A Dweller on Two Planets, by Philos. I have the book open before me now, and this is the prophetic passage that meets my eye. But as the post-age was stricken, this one must also be which has just passed. Shall America, together with the rest of the entire world, meet similar woe or story? Alas, worse, though not by water but by fire. Shall all be wiped out of existence, leaving a planet in ruins? Unto the end of coming into full obedience with the harmony of divine law shall the lash be applied, words may not portray the scenes. This is the message of the end of the age. Thus I have endeavored to give you details of my unearthly experiences with an individual I have every reason to believe may be from another world. In pondering the matter over in my mind, I have come to the conclusion that he was doubtless more or less playing a role here, as I sincerely believe the two Venusians were who contacted the Los Angeles newspaper reporter. In other words, they undoubtedly presented themselves to us in a manner that we with our lower perceptive abilities might understand and interpret according to our limited three-dimensional standards. It is my understanding that as of this day 24 Venusians are in our cities mingling with our people. In practically all cases they are unknown and undetected. Undoubtedly with time and a testimony of more persons concerning their experiences with extraterrestrial, we will be able to gain a clearer understanding of these much more highly evolved and intelligent beings. WHO are here on a mission of friendship and love. End.